Hey guys, this week's episode is brought to you by Delta Faucet. We've gone behind the scenes of their design process before, but today we're going to hear what their products are like out in the real world. Stay tuned for that, and you can learn more about their designs and innovations at deltafaucet.com/YHL. I'm John.
And I'm Sherry.
We like home stuff.
We like talking.
And we like the occasional game show sound effect. So welcome to Young House Love Has a Podcast, where we have deep and not so deep conversations about DIY, design, and life at home.
Today we're lamenting our most hated DIY project ever. We're also dissecting where realtors think we went wrong on our kitchen renovation, and we break down when it might be a terrible idea to follow design trends.
My heart is like still beating.
Guys, we had to set up the microphone so John could record this with his genuine, excited, elated, relieved.
Relief, I think is the word. I have a very important piece of paper in my hands.
You hear that rustling around?
But I have to tell the backstory to get to what it is.
Okay.
Because it makes no sense.
Pretend it's American Idol. We're going to filibuster for 45 minutes. And in the last 10 minutes, you'll hear the actual content.
We're going to bring back the past contestants that have been eliminated.
We are going to go blast from the past to episode. What one was that?
It was actually episode 20 and 21. I double checked. And both of those episodes, I talked about the irrigation system I installed last summer / fall. Yeah, remember that, everyone? I never wrote the post about it because it still has some unfinished business, we'll say. Some hanging chads.
Exactly.
Recapping real quick, I worked with my neighbor to install an irrigation system in our yard. He had done it before in one of his houses, so he sort of like showed me how to do it. I was very nervous about doing it. It was not an easy project. I will detail this more in a post that I will eventually write.
The meme for this would be like, install your own irrigation, they said. It will be fun, they said.
John tearing hair out is the image. I think it goes down in history as like the project I most regret having DIY'd.
The thing I think is funny is we always get that question, like, what have you DIY'd that I should just hire out? Like, save me the trouble. And for years, we were like, well, things have been annoying, but we're glad we did them. Now we have a loud and clear answer. Yeah. It's irrigation.
There's no longer a long pause when I'm asked that question. Part of it was it took a little bit longer to get started. It took a little bit longer to execute than I expected. And so by the time that I was fully done with it, it was basically time to winterize it. You know, these are pipes that are in the ground outside, so you have to make sure that they don't have water in them once the temperatures drop below freezing, because they might freeze and the pipes might burst. So you have to winterize it by blowing all the water out of them and shutting down the system for the whole winter. So by the time I actually got this thing up and running, I had like basically a week to throw down some grass seed, water it, hope it would sprout in the bare spots where I had dug everything up, and turn it off for the year. In my panic, I forgot that I have to have this thing inspected by the county. Totally forgot.
Like, he put all the dirt back in, packed it all down,
we buried
seeded
everything.
It, and we turned the sprinklers on, hoping that we'd get some grass to hide the torn up yard that our poor neighbors were dealing with. Cut to, okay, I'm calling for the inspection, and the inspector being like, okay, it's still dug out so I can see it, right?
Well, and to clarify, it's not the whole thing dug out. It's just the main device at the front where my irrigation system connects to the water main.
Right. And so John's like, oh, I have to redig everything out in that one area for them to inspect it. And then the guy very kindly was like, well, if it's winterized for the season, just have me inspect it in the spring.
Yeah. I talked to him and he was very nice about saying like, well, there's no point in doing it now. There's no water in it. Let's just wait till you turn it on in the spring. I'll come check it out then. They were totally cool with it. But again, it kind of left this whole project open-ended for like 6 months.
It was festering.
So fast forward to a couple weeks ago, I'm like, about time to get this turned on. I dug out the area around the backflow preventer. That's the device that has to be inspected that prevents the water, my irrigation, from flowing back into the water main. And I very nonchalantly like called the inspection line to have the guy come out and check it. Well, guys, I failed the inspection.
And I got a text from John, like, full of all the expletives.
I was like, I should have known. Like, of course, if there were something that was going to rear its ugly head again, it would be this.
And not only failed for one thing.
Oh, three things. I failed three things.
Three things.
I was like, I almost repeated some of the expletives, but I know children sometimes listen to this podcast, so just picture them in your head.
I'll do this. Beep, 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 beep.
I think what happened, and I'm not entirely sure about this, is at some point between my neighbor having installed his, and actually several of my neighbors having had theirs installed, because while I was doing this project, a lot of times I was like kind of poking around the neighborhood and seeing how other people had their devices set up.
Right, because like 90% of the systems in the neighborhood are configured the way that Ours is configured. So like it was allowed at one point and now it's not.
But coincidentally, another neighbor had just had a new system installed. And so his was still open and dug up and I could go over and see what a professionally installed system looked like these days. So I could make sure that mine matched. Like I could take pictures and take them back to my house and make sure that I reconstructed mine in the appropriate way. It did require a little bit more digging, which was the hardest part, but it only took me a couple hours to put it back together. And we got back home today and waiting.
This little paper.
This little inspection sheet that has a check mark next to approved.
Ding, ding, ding.
So put a fork in it. The irrigation is officially done.
As I like to say in celebration, po-wang. Callback.
So now that this is all kind of done, and I think I've emotionally recovered from everything.
I think you were like real low and now you're flying high.
Yeah, I think I finally am ready to write out what I did. It will not be probably a step-by-step, this is how you do it, because I don't want to paint the picture that you guys should go do this yourselves. But if you are interested in maybe doing a smaller yard, I think that was actually part of the big problem with mine, I should admit, is like the size of it. It was just a bigger undertaking.
But can we admit that in that like 1 week of having a system and seeding, the yard has never looked better, guys.
It is looking pretty good. So it was worth it. But I will write a post where I can sort of explain how the system works and what the struggles were and why I don't think it was a smart DIY for us to take on.
I was joking that it should be how to DIY your own irrigation. It should just be one sentence that says don't hire it out. I feel like that's not really in the spirit of our blog. So John will explain it and then he will tell you to hire it out.
Well, I will say against my better judgment that part of me is happy I did it. Because I'm glad I know how the system works. And so that if I ever want to reconfigure it, I can do it. And if I have ever a problem, I can most likely fix it myself. For instance, this whole issue with the inspection not passing the first time. Like, had we hired that out, it would have been me calling someone, scheduling time, shelling out some more money.
Right. And I think you actually save a lot of money knowing how the system works. Because many of our friends and neighbors who didn't install their own, who hired someone, pay about $75 to $150 a year just to get the water out of the system and winterize it and put the water back into the system and summerize it. And you've done both. Springerize it?
Summerize it.
Get it ready to go.
That's summer with an ER, not an AR.
Right. We're not going to summarize it like a book report. But what I mean is I think you saved a lot of money long term. Like say we live here 30 years and you're saving $150 a year by knowing that. That's great. And I feel like this is like childbirth. In 5 or 6 years, you'll be like, do your own irrigation. It's a wonderful thing to do.
In a few years, I want to have another.
You'll forget the pain. Exactly.
So I'm just going to sit here and kind of in the glow of this being done for a little while. And I'll let Sherry move on with her what's new.
Well, my what's new is that we got an awesome voicemail from a woman named Buffy, and this was in response to how to find super long curtains, and I thought this was just a completely new method I had never heard about, so I'm just going to play the voicemail.
Hi, guys. This is Buffy calling from San Antonio, Texas. I just listened to episode 44 and had to comment on the extra long curtains. I have 20-foot ceilings in a very open concept home. It was a difficult challenge trying to find these curtains. So what I did, I found an online company that does stage curtains for production companies. They also sell the used ones. I was able to get 300 pounds worth of velvet curtains, which was way more than I needed, but I've used them for several projects. Thanks so much for all you guys do. Bye.
I would never in a million years have thought to try stage curtains, but it is so brilliant. And the fact that they sell them in pounds is very funny to
me. Yeah, I'm trying to picture what 300 pounds of curtain looks like.
I know, I'm like, is it like a ball pit, but of curtains that you could jump into and sort of sink to the bottom?
That sounds dangerous.
But fun.
And dangerous.
And dangerous. Anyway, she didn't leave the exact website she used, but I just did some quick Googling and I just searched stage curtains and found many for sale through eBay, through retailers, like online shops that do it. If you wanted used ones to get an even better deal, I'm sure if you searched used stage curtains. But the cool thing is a lot of them are listed in length. So they will literally say 10-foot curtains, 12-foot curtains. So if you have one of these lofted open floor plan rooms and you're looking for things even longer than maybe IKEA sells, I think it's a really cool option.
And they also were pretty affordable from what at least you showed.
Yeah, I was finding some. They were like 12-foot curtains for $39.
I wonder, though, if that route might limit your sort of options in terms of material and pattern, for instance, because at least in my head, I picture stage curtains typically being velvet, which is, I think, what Buffy said she got.
Yes.
Kind of like those heavy, dramatic theater curtains.
Right. Some of them I saw were cotton polyester, which is what a lot of curtain manufacturers make curtains from. So I think they were good options. And they were not just like red velvet. They were navy blue. I saw some neutral ones.
If you guys want red velvet curtains with like a gold trim,
they're probably on the internet somewhere.
But now I'm going to give Sherry a little quiz. So this part of the show we often call What's Not, because I'm going to give Sherry a list of things in which most are real but one is fake. And she has to tell me what is real and what's not.
It's not called What's Snot.
Because the only answer to that is it's a mucus.
Too far!
Commonly found in the nasal cavity.
Disgusting. I'm never listening to this podcast again and I'm on it.
Sorry, I did mention earlier children are listening and then I just did that. They probably love that part.
They're laughing their butts off.
Anyways, this game is a kind of continuation from one that we played in episode 43 about things that realtors said buyers hated in people's living rooms.
Okay.
But this one is called 5 Kitchen Design Trends That Buyers Hate.
This will be fun.
It's also from realtor.com, just like the other one. But I have three kind of disclaimers, or at least prefaces to it.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, this list is from 2015, so okay, some of the trends might be considered dated. But here's my other sort of disclaimer slash note. We are guilty of all of them.
Oh, things that people don't want in a kitchen.
Things that buyers hate.
Well, now, bring it on.
Yeah. And my last one, and this is what makes me feel better about being guilty of all 5 things, is that it is really geared towards like realtors and what they think buyers wouldn't like for resale. So it's not necessarily these are bad trends or bad styles. It is realtory focused. Okay.
Well, it's a good thing our kitchen is not for sale.
So just keep that all in mind.
If you want it, you can't have it. If you don't want it, you still can't have it.
I'm very possessive right there. Okay, are you ready for this quiz?
Let's go.
Okay, so number one on the list of 5 kitchen design trends that buyers hate. Mixed metals.
I believe it because you can do it in a bad way.
Number 2, gray walls.
Ours are a very light gray. This is true. They're like the light, one drop of paint in the white to make our light, light gray walls. Yeah, I think that some buyers think it's like cement gray and it looks like you're living in like a jail or a cinder block room.
Number 3, DIY concrete countertops.
Well, that's not in our current kitchen, my friend.
Okay, true. We've been guilty of all these things.
I don't know. Really? That's a negative? According to realtors? I don't know. That seems like a plant. Let's see.
Number 4, open shelving.
Yeah, I know some people don't like that. It's not for everyone. Nothing's really for everyone, but I love it. We've done it in 2 out of 3 kitchens.
2 out of 3, yep. Number 5, reclaimed wood.
I don't see how that could be on there. Do they think it looks raggedy? Like you could snag your sweater on it? I don't know. I'm going to go with the one about the DIY concrete. It feels incredibly specific. Most realtors don't even know that you can DIY that. And also, I think you can do that poorly and it would be bad, but you can do that fantastically well. So I think it's mean to just blanketly say it's a bad idea.
Final answer.
It's going to be wrong, though.
It is wrong.
Gray paint.
Yes, it is gray paint.
I'm only number 2, baby, number 2. What I need to do is just start picking my number 2 answer. Because I was like, I think it's gray paint, but I'm more mad about concrete countertops. So I'm going to take a stand and pick that one.
DIY concrete countertops were on there because they said that countertops are the kitchen's primary focal point, and so it's important to ensure something for longevity. They think that the DIY concrete is a trendy material that, at best, will annoy the hell out of you in a few years.
Really? Well, they should talk to all the readers who email me and say, I love my DIY countertops years later.
I was going to say, their words, not mine. There was some strong opinions in this article, I will say. Like, for instance, mixed metals.
Mm-hmm.
Their beef with it is that they said the room might have that eclectic look now, but down the road, it's just going to look confused. And I quote from a kitchen designer in Chicago, anybody who mixes metals besides Rolex is an idiot. And maybe Rolex is an idiot too.
Wow. Strong words from a kitchen designer who must use only stainless everywhere if she uses
some people
stainless
think
appliances.
It's great. It's a guy, Scott.
Oh, Scott.
I'll keep his last name anonymous.
Right. Scott gets hate mail.
You can see it in the article. Said some people think it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. It's not. I think it's appalling.
Really? Does he not read House Beautiful?
I think the other ones on the list, the open shelving, you know, that's hit or miss with people.
Right, like some people like it, some people don't.
They did make an interesting point that they thought that trend was somewhat started by the recession in 2008 when people were trying to update their kitchens, but they didn't necessarily have the budget to do all new upper cabinets, and this was a more affordable option.
That's interesting. You know how there's that room above cabinets sometimes in a, say your room has 9-foot ceilings or even 8-foot ceilings, but the cabinets don't go to the ceiling. So the trend sort of recession base that I kept seeing that I loved was take your cabinets off the wall because there's that awkward foot of space above them. What do you put up there? Not fake vines, not weird.
Birdhouses.
Not birdhouses. Remove the cabinets off the wall and hang them ceiling mounted with some crown. So like maybe 4 inches below your ceiling, you drill them back in and put some crown up there and it looks like they go to the ceiling. And then you hang one shelf under them. So you have about 12 inches of space above the shelf and the cabinets begin. They did it in Domino Magazine. I've seen it, I think, in Country Living. And even Chris Loves Julia did that in their recent makeover of the Pittsburgh house. They had that area where they raised the cabinets, used the existing cabinets.
That was Baltimore.
Baltimore, you're right. It has that shelf. And you can put like little cooking stuff on it, little spices. It's not like a full-fledged open cabinet system. It's just one ledge.
Well, it's that way of taking that empty dead space that's too high to reach and moving it down to open functional space.
Yeah, I love that idea. I'll put a photo of a kitchen or two like that in the show notes so you guys can check it out. It is such a smart way to deal with cabinets that don't go to the ceiling if you're wrestling with that. A lot of people ask me what to put up there. My answer is take them off the wall and make a shelf. Even if your backsplash ends there, putting a shelf there makes it look perfect like it was always like that.
My other answer is just leave it empty.
Yeah, when in doubt.
Well, I will put a link to this in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast. I guess Sherry will also put a couple of those pictures of kitchens with the open shelf on the bottom. And you can see the fifth thing on the list.
Dun, dun, dun. Clickbait.
It's not very good. Don't. it's industrial look or something like that.
Oh, well, that's like all the rage right now.
Maybe not.
Maybe in 2015, it was bottom of the barrel. 2017, all the rage.
Yeah, realtors were over it.
And now we have a listener question, which doesn't come from one person or even two people or three people. It comes from like 30 people who have left voicemails, Instagram, Facebook messages, and even emails all about this phenomenon that we call millennial pink. And the questions range from, have you seen that millennial pink is a thing and do you think your reach house is millennial pink? To, do you think it's trendy and you won't like that color later? Or what do we feel about any color that sort of picks up so much steam? There are articles written about it. So let's talk about it.
Yes, let's unpack millennial pink a little bit.
Let's unpink millennial pink. That did not sound as good in my...
That was a terrible wordplay. First of all, what is a millennial?
Well, we're not millennials. We're on the cusp.
Yeah, we are technically, I think, by some definitions, millennials. Because I did a big research project that I was consulting on with my ad agency about this. And a lot of definitions put millennials starting around 1981, 82, which are our birth years.
Oh, that's us.
I consider ourselves old millennials, or as another article I found, the Oregon Trail generation.
Yeah, we're definitely more Oregon Trail than millennials.
Yes, I'll put a link to that in the show notes. It was a very interesting description of this pocket generation that's somewhere between millennials and Generation X.
Yeah, because when you say Oregon Trail, my heart leaps with excitement. And when you say millennial, I'm like, really? Aren't millennials like still graduating? Like, can we really
be? Yes, millennials are, I forget the back end of it, but they're like still in college.
I don't feel like we can really be in the same bucket as people who got Facebook and like, I don't know, middle school. We didn't get it until like after college.
Except for your love of pink.
That's right. I do like pink.
Well, let's talk about millennial pink then, now that we've defined millennial.
So millennial pink, which I've learned, is also known as Tumblr pink or Scandi pink.
Tumblr as in like the blogging platform,
yes,
Tumblr?
Yes, like Tumblr, no E. So it was first defined by New York Magazine in an article, I believe. And they said this color can be defined as a range of shades from beige with just a touch of blush to a peach salmon hybrid. And this came out in March. March 19th, my birthday.
Oh.
That we actually chose the color for the beach house on Christmas Eve. As you guys know, we did a podcast episode.
21? That's a guess.
No, 31.
31.
Podcast episode 31, we explained that John's sister walked into the room holding this little cup from a hotel, and we were like, what if we made the beach house that color? And you might say, well, maybe the cup was inspired by millennial pink. But this hotel, although new, has had a pink logo for like 10 years from back when it was a gallery.
Well, when it was a gallery, though, their pink was like Technicolor pink.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was like almost like a really orangey pink. But the woman who started the gallery and transitioned it to the hotel, her house has often been...
very pink.
Yes.
We shot her house for our blog. It was in Domino, and then we shot her house for our blog many, many years ago.
2008, I think.
Yeah, almost 10 years ago. And she had a light pink floor that is millennial pink.
Yes.
Like, she has loved this color, and we were inspired by her cup. So for anyone asking, did you guys choose pink because millennial pink is trending? I think that's a really bad reason to paint your house a color, guys, because if something is trending, it will go up and then it will go down. And you don't want to have to repaint your house every time a new color is trending.
Yeah, it certainly was not a conscious like, well, what is the color trend? Let's pick that. I mean, you guys heard in those episodes and that blog post where we outlined the sort of torturous road that we took to figure out what color to paint, that it was not as simple as looking at what was trending. It was looking at what fit best in the street.
And also what fits in this beachy community. I do not think this is a good color to paint your house in the middle of suburbia between a tan house and a white house. Like, it might look crazy. So I think it's safe to say that we do recognize that it does fall within the range of millennial pink.
Well, it sounds like that range is pretty big, depending on the definition.
Right. The funny thing is there's been a lot of blowback for millennial pink because people...
Well, on a heavy issue such as this, you would imagine people get fired up.
Slate did this whole article that was like, everything is not millennial pink. And they basically said, like, there are five examples people give for millennial pink. Like, what was that? Wes Anderson's Hotel and Budapest Hotel?
Yeah, the Grand Budapest.
Maybe that's what... I don't know.
Let's look this up.
Did, like, a lot of millennials see that movie?
Yeah, millennials love Wes Anderson.
Wes Anderson's big with millennials. We didn't see that movie, but they also mention it's like in ads for shoes and garments. And when you put all the little quilted pictures together like Slate did, they were like, you can see that this is like 30 colors. And can you say a color is trending when it's really a range of 30 colors, some being beige as they described and some being more of a hot pink or pastel pink. Some have more gray. I think our beach house is sort of right in the middle of millennial pink. It's a salmony peach color that doesn't look beige to me. It's definitely pink. Like, it's kind of the baby of rose quartz, which was named the color of the year by Pantone back in 2016.
I mean, I think we certainly recognize that choosing that color was a good color for photographing and for, you know, sharing on social media and stuff. And that wasn't a big part of the decision, but I think we certainly like saw the promise of that over white or gray.
Yeah, I think for a rental, I was more driven by what would be cute to rent. Like, I was picturing the Airbnb pictures or right, whatever service we use. And it was fun and punchy for the beach atmosphere. Like, yeah, we weren't moving into the beach town painting the house gray.
Yeah, I don't think we have to rehash that whole decision. That's in episode 31, I think we determined.
Right. And I think our love of pink was sort of a slow build. I'm testing a theory I've not said out loud to you, but I will see if you disagree or agree. My theory is that we have loved blue so consistently, a light blue and a teal color, that perhaps our slow build and love of pink is because we realize it pairs really nicely with that blue that we consistently love.
I hear this theory and I concur.
Right?
Yes.
Because even things like the show house that we did back in 2014, we had an office with a blue ceiling and a pink rug. Fast forward to 2014 when we were renovating our...
We were already in 2014.
Oh.
Fast forward to later in 2014.
Later that year when we were renovating our living room, we did a blue ceiling in there and a rug with pinkish tones and even got pink cushions for the couch.
Yeah. I mean, the pink pillows I'm looking at right now, we have had for... almost 3 years. It's probably the longest you've ever kept a single throw pillow in one
seriously
spot.
Seriously.
And they're pink. And I think it is because we've realized through, maybe it was the showhouse process, I didn't think about that, that pink is a really nice complement to the blue that we've always gravitated towards.
Yeah, well, they pair together easily. It's like, I was going to say Neapolitan ice cream, but there's no blue in that. Right.
You know, blue raspberry.
And even I was thinking about the painting we got for our 7th anniversary, which was that 2014 also?
Gosh. 2014 was a big year for us in pink.
It was the year of pink and blue. That is a beautiful blue painting that we got for our anniversary. It was a splurge, like the most we've ever paid for a painting. The reason we loved it and chose that one was that it had so many beautiful teal bright blues and these cute little pops of pink. And if you held a millennial pink picture up, it's the exact pink in that painting. And like any trend, I think it's going to crest and go back down, right? And maybe like, I'm calling the next color dusty purple.
Like lavender?
It's really hard to explain, but more like a putty color. I have a nail polish that's like mostly gray, but a little bit lavender, but dusty, dusty, dusty. I could see lower cabinets, which is very cool right now, to do this sage green, like a greeny gray color with a butcher block, going to this like dusty lavender or plum color with a butcher block.
Well, I think that's probably a good transition to just talk generally about like how should people think about responding to color trends when they're making decorating decisions, like whether you are subconsciously or consciously trying to incorporate them. Like, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Right. Because I think right now, let's take another example, because I don't think pink's the only cool thing right now. I think there are like 10 mass retailers who are selling navy blue velvet tufted sofas. I could link to 10 in the show notes. They're there. So that is also a trend right now, is the navy blue velvet tufted sofa. If you were to say, wait, but if that's a trend, should I not get it or should I get it? Like, does that make it good to adapt for my home or bad? I would say, if you're buying the navy blue tufted sofa because society is telling you this is a trend and you're someone who wants to adhere to filling your house with things that are on trend, that might be the wrong reason to buy the sofa, because when society tells you no, emerald green tufted velvet sofas are in, you're going to want to switch your sofa.
Right. You're going to second guess or start to dislike the decision you made.
Exactly. If your only motivation is, I'm seeing it everywhere on Pinterest and I actually like it myself,
I want to do what the cool kids are doing.
Right.
That's always been a motivating factor in my life. Have I achieved it? No.
I don't know, you have a beard. Weren't beards really cool for a second?
That had crested like 2 years ago.
Then the man bun came, but you never went man bun.
I'll get that in like 2019.
Yeah, you'll be doing the man bun when everyone else is doing like a faux hawk. Again, those are going to come back.
But I think you're right that it's fine to decorate based on trends. Again, whether it's a purposeful choice or an accidental choice like ours. But you also want to make sure that there are other reasons behind it. Because if you are swayed so much by what you're just told is popular, then you are going to sway to fall out of love with something.
Exactly. Like, I think it's a very silly thing, though, to say, I really love a navy blue tufted sofa, but I'm not going to do it because everyone's doing it. Your house is a place you come back to. The world doesn't come back to it. They don't eat and sleep there. Like, it's just your place. So all that should matter is if the people in that space appreciate the sofa. So if you love something, don't not buy it because it's trendy, and don't buy it because it's trendy. Buy it because you like it.
And I will say, on color trends, they're probably a safer trend to follow, because, like, you have to admit, the pendulum on colors, like, doesn't swing as wide as, like, the trends on, say, patterns or haircuts or clothing styles. When pink goes out, it's not like no one's gonna use it.
Right. Like, these colors all exist, right? Yeah. There's a spectrum of colors, and people are probably using them at all times.
Yeah, it's probably pretty safe to decorate around color trends. It's the things that are more specific, like...
Yeah, I was going to say patterns or materials.
Yeah.
Like, a moment a few years ago, you guys will recall, there were chevron blankets and curtains everywhere that were gray and yellow. Standing in the grocery store, you could see 5 covers of magazines with yellow and gray, either curtains, blankets, pillows. It was a thing in chevron pattern.
They're like finally making it to Kleenex boxes now.
Yeah, like chevron has trickled down. But that is a very specific thing because it's a pattern and a color combination. It's not just saying like yellow's in, yellow's out. It's more a moment in time when it's a pattern and a combination of colors.
Yes, what you're saying is the more specific the trend, the more likely that it's going to pass or that you could fall out of love with it. But a color is such a general thing.
Well, and I think what's a perfect example in this discussion when we're talking about colors and where they go is we've liked the same blue for 10 years. So I think in general, maybe a super specific color like a neon yellow from the 80s might be harder to decorate with because, again, it's so specific. But these colors that occur in nature and in flowers and in water or sunsets, they seem safer to me. They're like in our life already.
Well, and I'm going to throw out one pro to decorating on a color trend, you know, to leaning into the trend, is it does make the job of decorating a little bit easier, because not only are there more sort of inspiration images out there to pull from.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Like, now I can buy a pink toaster.
I was going to say, yes, there's also a lot more products available. I mean, if we wanted to deck out our entire beach house in millennial pink items, we probably could. We aren't going to.
Right, but they're available.
If we can resist.
Hold yourself back, John.
But it does mean, like, if you really like the emerald green trend or you like the rose quartz trend, like, good, because now it's going to be in 10 retailers' new collections and you'll have a lot more items to pick from.
Do you want a navy nailhead chair? There are 30.
Totally. And if you guys want to dive deeper into this whole millennial pink thing, the trend and what it means, and sort of some of the examples of what it looks like.
Range of colors that are all millennial
from
pink.
From beige to salmon to whatever else they said in that list. We'll put links to some of the articles in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast. And if you guys have any questions for us that you want us to answer on a future episode, you can leave us a voicemail at 571-4-YHLHAP.
And as you guys have probably figured out, we have some more digging, but first we have to take a quick break. This week's episode is brought to you by Delta Faucet, who you may remember from a few weeks ago when we talked to them about their H2O kinetic showerheads.
Yeah, one of their designers was telling us how he had been initially skeptical of that technology. You know, does it really deliver a warmer shower with better coverage?
Exactly. And it turns out he's not the only one who was convinced after trying one in his own home. This is a real message that we got on our podcast voicemail the other day.
Hi, this is Mary Ann. I'm from Nashville, Tennessee. My husband is a contractor, and we are currently remodeling our house. And I wanted to let you guys know that I totally got him to buy the Delta shower that was advertised on your show, and it is awesome. Oh, my word. It feels like rain, and it really does keep the heat. Just want to let you guys know that. Have a good day. Bye.
So yeah, she's not an actor. Marianne is a real person who just listened to our podcast and decided to buy one and try it out for herself. And she was kind enough to let us play her voicemail for you guys.
I like real person testimonials the best of all testimonials, except for celebrity endorsements. Just kidding.
And if you want to see the shower head she's talking about or learn more about how Delta's H2O kinetic technology can make your shower feel better and warmer, head over to deltafaucet.com/YHL. Again, that's deltafaucet.com/YHL. Now, I realize you guys might think this music is unnecessary by now because we could just go right into it after the break.
It's a transition where I dance a little and then I get ready to regale you with stories.
I can't let it go, so I'm going to play it. So the thing I'm digging this week, I was reminded of because we just got back from a quick business trip to Chicago and I was reminded of how useful it was. And it's a mesh bag. A mesh laundry bag.
John's digging mesh.
It's stupid, I know, but a few years ago, we bought this just simple mesh laundry bag that is pretty tiny and compact when you squish it up, and we keep it in our suitcase. So I don't have to think about it at all when we are packing to leave anywhere.
It's always in that like zippered front pocket that nobody uses for anything else.
No, I keep it on an interior pocket that I don't use.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah. Fun fact for you, Sherry.
It just shows up. I get off the plane with you. We go to the hotel. The mesh bag is there. I don't know how it gets there, but it comes along.
Well, and the reason we got it is because, duh, when you get on a vacation, you have dirty clothes and you want to keep them separate from your clean clothes, which often travel back in the same bag. My old system used to be just taking the first t-shirt that I wore that was dirty and basically using that as a sack.
It was like a blockade, basically. You like shrouded the dirty clothes in the t-shirt.
They would all get wrapped in that.
Sometimes they came out the head hole. Sometimes they came out the arm hole.
Exactly. It was an imperfect system. So I don't even remember exactly where I got this bag from. Maybe Target, Bed Bath & Beyond, something. It's probably less than $6, but it is just a handy thing to keep in that suitcase. Again, I don't have to think about it so that we can throw all of our dirty laundry in it and keep it separate on the way home. And then when we get home, throw it right in the laundry machine.
Exactly. I think what we tried to do...
The washing machine.
What I was going to say is I think a long time ago when we'd go on these longer vacations with the children and we had multiple suitcases, we would make one suitcase into like the dirty clothes suitcase. But especially for these quick trips in and out, business trips, we just have one suitcase and it has everything in it. Shoes, clothes, computer, everything in it. And so I think that when we have the bag, it's nice because you guys know when we get home, we like to immediately unpack. And so to get the laundry running, all it entails is unzip suitcase, remove mesh bag, walk to laundry room, dump in washer, start load. So it's much easier than going through the suitcase and being like, oh, there was a sock hiding under the shoe and under the laptop. Like everything is separated and it's easier to unpack.
And I'll say the other nice thing about getting these mesh bags is oftentimes they come in sets, like they'll be smaller ones. And if you get some that are good for actually going in the washing machine itself, we have started using those for like kids' socks and other small items because it was a rogue baby sock that took down our last washer. It
took it way down. We thought like, oh, we'll call a service guy. This will be worth the $75 fee or whatever. He'll revive the washer. Nope, completely dead.
Well, he could have fixed it. Probably just would have been more money than it was worth because it was an old washing machine and we were going to be upgrading eventually anyway. So that was the time that we got our new top loader.
Yeah, he was like, it would probably be like $300 for that new part. And we're like, what? A new washer is like $500.
Darn you, sock. So I'll put a link to a mesh bag or two in the show notes.
And what I'm digging is also trip related because when we came back, I realized another thing that I really appreciate about these quick trips is that I use a little leather duffel. They're like a carry-on bag, but it looks like an oversized purse.
I was going to say, it's a big purse.
It's a big purse. Like it's kind of shaped like an arch and the zipper goes all the way up and down. And then I can fit every single item I need. So in the duffel that I carry, I have my pajamas, my clothes. We just stayed over for one night.
Can we be real though? Not every single item. The shoes go
right,
in my
bag. Right, the shoes go in the big suitcase with the rolly. So in the duffel is like all my clothes, my pajamas, even my makeup bag, and maybe a book or anything I'm reading. So essentially, the suitcase is full of shoes, anything we need for our presentations, clothing for John, and then I take my little bag, and we're really like travelers. We never check anything, and we just each have one carry-on basically for these flights. So I'm going to find some. I think mine is made by a company named Bodhi, my bag. I was looking at it on the flight back home and saying, like, I should dig this. It's so nice. I tuck it under the seat on the plane. Like, it's very small and easy to carry around, but it's great. I think they're also called Weekenders now that I think of it. So I'm going to find some. I don't know if Bodhi still makes them. Mine's like 5 years old. But I think the key is it's extra nice when it just looks like a big purse. So it doesn't look like you're carrying a gym bag around the airport and to the hotel. Sometimes we eat dinner when we arrive. And just to have like one wheelie suitcase and a purse looks less crazy than rolling in somewhere with like the big giant duffel bag and the big suitcase.
And pro tip for the guys out there, you won't be asked to carry it.
That's right. I love carrying it. I keep it with me at all times. I basically am very self-sufficient with this bag, and only John carries the shoes.
I was like, you would be shoeless.
I would be shoeless. Thanks for listening to Young House Love Has a Podcast. I cannot even believe that next week is going to be episode 50.
And if you've enjoyed the 49 so far, we don't want your money or your firstborn child, but it would make our day if you'd tell someone about it.
And keep telling us what you do while you listen. Like Jennifer Laura Design on Instagram, who listened while holding her six-week-old baby in the NICU.
And check out younghouselove.com/podcast for all the bonus links, photos, and info from this episode. Like more on the rise of millennial pink and what realtors might hate about your kitchen.
And I'll put a link to my new Instagram account dedicated to all things pink. For listeners who remember the whole pinch story, the name is a wink to that.
Later.
Bye. Hold on, I'm just eating a delicious pretzel covered in dark chocolate. Podcasting makes you hungry. Well, now I need water.
Oh, gosh. We take one break.
Hold on, I'll just do this.
Oh, she's putting her mouth under the faucet, guys. Like a savage.
I'm all business.